There are some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a large unexpected inheritance. An always-on-the-verge-of-death phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone, up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard, so you can get a new one. Just trade in any phone from our top brands on any unlimited plan. With new line on my plan. Additional terms apply for trade-in and pay off your phone offer. See Verizon.com for details.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to leave up holiday decorations year-round. Others have the need to use their garage as practice space for their new metal band. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
Hello and welcome to Imp's WWE Adventures Podcast on the Social Suplex Podcast Network. Help the network out by leaving us a 5-star review, give a donation directly through Red Circle, and become one of the amazing community by joining the Social Suplex Discord. A link is in the description. Order merch from all our shows over at chops-tees.com. Thank you, Dickie. Listen to the other top-notch shows here on the Social Suplex Podcast Network, One Nation Radio, Keeping It Strong Style, All Things Elite, Wrestling Art with Chris Things, Trish and Sarah, Tunnel Talk, and Sam Brown's AEW Match Guide. My name is Matt Mayer, aka Imp, and this is your quick look back at the WWE week that was 30 minutes. Oh, that's going to be a push this week. The Royal Rumble and Monday Night Raw at the end. For me, it might be quite a long episode and quite a difficult edit. But you know, it's a big special. Put the effort in when it's time for a big special. And I will do the quick note that I'm not really going to cover the Janelle Grant lawsuit that came out this past Friday. I recorded on Wednesday. I edited on the Friday. I didn't see the news until the episode was up. And I will say, Trisha and Sarah did an extensive dive into it and talk about it. So I highly recommend listening to their show. Because obviously, that is way more important than, do you like Jey Uso winning? One thing is far, far more important than, you know, our little entertainment thing. So I highly recommend going to listen to that. But first of all, in terms of this show, we're going to be jumping over to Indianapolis, Indiana for the Royal Rumble live on Netflix, the first big special live on Netflix. How was it? How's the show? How's the production? How did it go down? How did it feel? Let's jump on over right now. Let's not beat around it because there's a lot to cover. Let's jump on over to the 2025 Royal Rumble. Of all people, Jey Uso is your winner. With television building up, focusing on certain names, especially John Cena, CM Punk, Roman Reigns. With John Cena and Roman Reigns obviously not there as much, CM Punk had kind of become a main character of Monday Night Raw especially. I referred to in the past of it, of characters backstage feeling like sometimes they'll be almost the effect of, oh, you have to talk about how you feel about Roman Reigns. But in the build to the Rumble, they almost felt like that's what they were doing with CM Punk. Really building up him as like this almost central character of everybody spinning off of how they feel about him, with the focus on Drew McIntyre and Seth Rollins as well. Which means that you purposefully focus the audience on a certain section of people. I mean, they're not even considering number 6 or 7, which is probably where I'd place Jey Uso. He's probably around that number choice, you would think, in terms of the lineup. And I did say last week that he was my, like, for Saturday night's main event, the level of feud they'd done with Gunter. I was like, yeah, it was fine for that spot. However, I guess I don't know if it counts as contradictory to myself, but because I'm viewing what happened on Saturday night's main event now as part of the Jey Uso building story, suddenly I feel absolutely fine with him winning, with him going to WrestleMania. Yes, he's going to get a title shot, but I don't quite see what there is to be upset about, because he's not going to main event. If you're like, oh, I don't want to watch WrestleMania because Jey Uso's main eventing. He ain't main eventing. Guaranteed, neither Rumble winner is main eventing any show. It's almost set in my mind that you're going to have whatever Roman Reigns is doing on night one, you're going to have what Cody Rhodes is doing on night two. And I feel like that's been a given for half a year at least now, since they had the Survivor Series thing and they kicked off the story with CM Punk. Because I thought, oh, Roman Reigns Punk, okay, there we go. That's going to be Roman Reigns' program, and then you have Cody having his program. But yeah, I'm absolutely fine with Jey Uso winning. It made me laugh on the Monday when different people were like getting around to it and then calmed down a bit, starting to think. And I think it was like at 5, 6pm my own time, I just seemed to get message after message. I'd be like, oh, how do you feel about Jey Uso? It's cool. I was like, obviously, like, some of them were just like normal friends who had just read an article or something. I was like, oh, apparently fans were upset about this. How do you feel about it? It's like, eh, you know, there's a reason I'm not on Twitter. Something has to either be the best thing in the world or the worst thing ever. And Jey Uso's like, no, it's fine. especially within the context of the story they've been doing with Gunther, where twice now Gunther has beaten him. And the manner in which he lost his title match as well, I feel like, feeds into this really well. Gunther didn't just, like, thump him or anything. It wasn't like your Gunther demolishes him. Like, no, it was a pretty even contest, the way that they were playing it. Then, right at the end, when Jey Uso was going for a spear, Gunther, in a really smooth transition, just flipped him up into a powerbomb, and that just caught Jey Uso, winded him, and Gunther was able to hit a second and win. Like, that doesn't scream, oh, you're not worthy of fighting me again. Because I thought the Jey Uso story did a lot for Gunther for re-establishing his confident champion persona. Because the story they did for me with Damian Priest was just so rain damaging, where the Gunther's days as champion are numbered after that, because that's not a sentiment that's going to leave anymore. But now you can use it with Jey Uso, where we saw Gunther talk confidently, we saw Gunther win, but Jey Uso can poke holes saying that it's a fake confidence, like, and he himself is believing himself that he can win. I just like the story that way it can go, with the big asterisk of, I'm guaranteeing it's not main eventing, you can calm down. It's okay. Is it a little bit cheeky to actually give your secondary level world championship match the Rumble win? Yeah, it is, because you were focusing on the world title and then the different one ended up winning. But I like it, it's fine. It makes the Royal Rumble unpredictable. And that's something, especially during the Vince era, where they would paint it as being unpredictable, but mostly it'd come down to single digit, like maybe like one or two people. I don't even remember it really ever being three that he felt like it. The three was like quite an exciting experience. Oh, Roman Reigns, John Cena, or CM Punk, which one's going to win? I've got no idea. All three of them could legit main event, and all three would be a good contender for Cody. But for me, Jey Uso, absolutely fine to go for Gunther. And they didn't hold off saying it. He said it in the press conference immediately afterwards. So let's actually go through the match. Now that you know that I had a decent time, and just the Rumbles themselves, actually, in terms of the two matches, just for me, it was emblematic of the build, where the men's one was had all this intricate stuff built up, and it really built up the... Well, even if you didn't feel like it was that intricate, they really built up how important it was to the individual characters, especially with more secondary ones, I guess, like Seth Rollins, like Sami Zayn. They did a really good job in just elevating the importance of the Rumble, and they loaded it with those big stars, and it just felt like it was a really loaded Rumble. And for me, it showed where there was, what, Joe Hendry? Was he really the only surprise? I show speed, but he replaced Tozawa. But yeah, really, it was only one guy. He got a return in AJ Styles, but he counts as a current guy. It was a Rumble full of current lads. They didn't need the surprises. For me, that absolutely screams of doing like good work before the Rumble and then obviously paying it off on the night. But then there was also a Women's Rumble, which seemingly got no attention in the build. It was in a way of, oh, there's a Women's Rumble, by the way. And that's how it felt like on the night as well. It opened up the show, but it was very nothing. It felt exactly like the build's been. The build itself was nothing. It almost didn't exist. Any momentum for the promotion of it really got when we got the Charlotte Flair promo starting to play. I was obviously going to be returning. So it seemed like really the only important note in the Rumble was Charlotte Flair's going to come back. She's going to become number one contender. And there was nothing else to dance with. There were no other ideas. And that was absolutely apparent in the way that the Rumble was built. No flow-through story, nothing coming out of it, just Charlotte Flair. There's like a nice little accolade you can give to Roxanne Perez, given that she broke the record for being the longest in the Rumble. But there's no actual, like, story. There's nothing there. And Charlotte Flair is now having to, because of course she's a returning character, so of course there's going to be no story yet that she's going to now build on it. And I thought what they did on Raw was a good start. But it's... Yeah, the Women's Rumble was nothing, just like the build, whilst the men's one had all of these layers, and I personally think the men's one was one of the best they've ever done. For me, easily top five. Especially when I go back and watch Rumbles, there aren't actually that many truly great ones. But I feel like this one broke it. This one felt like a... I don't want to say once in a generation one, but it's just because they put the effort in beforehand and it really paid off. Like, if you did this more routinely... This is what sucks about it with the women's division. Like, I can see the quality that you're able to create, but you're just not putting any effort in with the women's titles. So anyway, let's do the men's one first. I'm going to go through it in order as well. The first two were Rey Mysterio and Penta, the dream pairing that they've been building up a little bit on Monday Night Raw. I said even building it up, is a little logic of calling Penta the second best luchador in the world and then not really doing anything else. For me, that's a really clever little subtle build where you go, well, who's number one? Oh, it's Rey Mysterio. So you've made that connection yourself. They've not had to talk about it. And obviously a really cool first two. Cerro Miero in the Rumble is quite a wild sight. I was watching you on like PWG and Lucha Underground all these years ago, and that now here you are in front of 65,000, or at least that was the more accurate number that was reported. It really made me laugh that on the press conference Triple H said 70,000 and right below him came up 65,000. But it makes it even funnier. On Monday Night Raw, they said 70,000 and the graphic they'd shown in the press conference was now changed to 70,000. It's like, okay, so this is the number that they want to promote, is they got 70,000. I'm assuming the number wasn't 70,000 given the graphic that came up. They accidentally put out the correct number. So yeah, Cerro Miero in the Rumble. The 619, not as cool. In the little chant afterwards. A great start with the two Lucha lads given the spot to go. Poor Penta immediately planted both feet, immediately eliminated. We can always tell that everybody's on board here. Like, none of this want this. If it's unavoidable, if he left his feet on the ground for like way too long, it's kind of like, we can't avoid this. You've eliminated yourself. Like, it sucks, but oh well. But it felt like everybody's on board. It's almost like the suspending your disbelief type of thing. Like, ah. I'm fine with it. This is okay. Like, obviously, we don't want this to be. I think we can get away with it. And the production seems to quickly agree. Because, yeah, it was quick enough to go, like, it's fine to pretend that didn't happen. Like, we all were all in on this, guys. You know how this works. Number three was Chad Gable. Already, this felt way more inspired than the Women's Rumble. And we're only three entrants in. Penta's slip did mean that Rey's close spot that came afterwards got a much bigger reaction. It had a positive effect for a while. Until, like, the story of the match really takes over. The Lucha men teamed together to ground innocent Chad, and Penta flipped Rey over his shoulders onto Chad's knees. The poor, poor man. Number four, Carmelo Hayes. Another entrant that should mix perfectly with the lads in the ring. Smart to have such strong actors to flow around in Penta and Rey. That the Women's Rumble had Io, and also Bayley played a similar role. Whenever somebody came into the ring, those two people were just there to take the big move and go to their corners for the next thing. And it was always like one of those two. And I felt like Rey and Penta in this first portion were doing that as well. And they made Carmelo Hayes look awesome. Plenty of springboard bounces. A temporary Team America before it immediately exploded into combat. Number five, Santos Escobar. A somewhat flat reaction, but Lucha Underground is properly flowing. And that can only be one thing. I've forgotten his Lucha Underground name, but he wore the deer head. Hit a 619 on Rey. Destroyer on Penta. Then Karma hit and he ate the promised faint kick. Give a fun opening for Chad to put each guy over the top rope onto the apron, only for them to flip back into the ring.
There are some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a large unexpected inheritance. An always-on-the-verge-of-death phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone, up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard, so you can get a new one. Just trade in any phone from our top brands on any unlimited plan. With new line on my plan. Additional terms apply for trade-in and pay off your phone offer. See Verizon.com for details.
Owning a boat comes with a number of perks, like being able to fling your favorite fishing rod around. And here's another perk. GEICO's boat insurance covers your boat and your belongings. And with specialist support from agents that are as passionate about boating as you are, there's so much value that you'll want to high-five someone. But not while you're holding your fishing rod. That's a prized possession. So hold on tight with both hands and keep it covered through boat insurance. Get more with GEICO.
Number six, Otis. This lad is still so properly over, in spite of not really progressing anywhere for I don't know how long now, the breakup. Interrupting Gable stopped that flow and suplexed a big man. They so good. But that rumble fire wasn't so easily extinguished in Otis. However, number seven, Bron Breakker. Like, now this is an interesting number for this man. Amazing explosive arrival sphere, bringing down Mello for the first elimination. Breakker burst onto the scene, wreaking havoc on everyone, like a second spear eliminated Escobar. Generally, I really had a great time with number eight. Akira Tozawa, attacked by Mello on the ramp, didn't get to go down to the ring, gets taken backstage and the camera follows through Gorilla and then trips. He's like, well, gotta have somebody, like, who's gonna replace him? Like, speed, yeah, you go in the rumble. Okay, I guess. And then obviously once you go out, there's full music, production, graphics, everything. So the illusion of it being an off-the-cuff the moment is completely shattered. However, it's still fun. It's silly. Actually eliminated Otis too. Before death, he eliminated Otis with the help of Bron Breakker. And then as he's doing his, I guess, trying to do a Roman Reigns Raw type thing, within the shot you see Bron Breakker already rebounding, charging, ready to spear the life out of him. And Jesus Christ, the spear this guy took. Like an incredible crash test dummy. There's a sack of potatoes, just bang. He took two incredible bumps. Like, shout out to him. Because that was just two really well taken bumps. He just let himself get wrecked. But then not just immediately eliminated, thrown over the top rope and caught by Otis. And immediately my brain's going, oh, I'm worried that we could be getting the more silly thing. But nope, Otis launched him over the announce desk in this amazing comedic fashion. And for me, this is absolutely perfect. It was what was worked so well with the Drew Carey stuff in 2001. You're in there, you do your spots very quickly, and you're gone before the next entrant comes out. Nice, short and sweet, doesn't outstay its welcome, just a fun little laugh, and we move on to the next thing. And that next thing was Sheamus. Great reaction for the Irishman, some lovely flows. But the Brogue grounded Bron and the momentum in time for the next lad. Number 10, Jimmy Uso. Uso in the wind to Penta. Corner hip charges to everybody else. And that's it. We're up, pal. It was just a note for Jimmy that I thought they said it's either only his second or third Rumble, in spite of being the company for God knows how long. Like, he's not even, like, accidentally made it into more Rumbles because they just needed bodies. It's just not been in them. Number 11, Andrade. Returned in the Rumble last year. Had a fun feud with Melo over the summer, but it's pretty much exactly where he was when he came back. But he's in there for one reason. And that reason is number 12, Jacob Fatu. Andrade was the calm before the storm. It's a really good flow to this year's Rumble, where the main problem with the women's one was it was a really long stretch of, oh, it's you, oh, it's you. Whilst the men's one, you build up a few, oh, it's yous, then you have a guy who's just going to eliminate them all. So the number never really got too high. There was a period in the women's Rumble, there were just so many in the ring. There's so many competitors because nobody was getting eliminated. There was no like big star coming out just to kind of even the field a little bit. This was way better paced. Like, it would never get above a certain level because somebody would come out and start throwing out bodies. Fatu, double Samoan drop, set his arrival. Chad Gable, Rey Mysterio, and Andrade all dumped unceremoniously. Just immediately, that yes, give that man all the eliminations. Just the shift in the atmosphere as well. That's something else that was really well paced. Number 7 was Bron Breakker. That felt like a shift in the atmosphere away from the fun luchador opening and quick paced stuff we'd had for those first few entrances. Then Jacob Fatu also signified the next shift. Almost getting you ready for like Samoan time, because of course number 16 arrives and completely shifts us into the second half with all the big stars. But number 13, Ludwig Kaiser. Hinted on Raw about going for Penta next. Well, here you go. Charged down to the ring before just whoa, taking his time, just stopping, is like trying to pick the right moment to run into the ring and go for Penta. Eventually doing so, and mistimed it completely, goes straight for the man, only to be instantly thrown out in one of the shortest Rumble times ever. They might have been going for the record, but he obviously had to charge across the ring, get to break it, then get chucked out, so he's never going to break Santino's in-out type of thing, just because of how smooth and quick the Santino was in 2009. And as I was just saying, continuing their bodies. Number 14, The Miz. Barking at Breakker, going after Sheamus, actually hitting his finisher on Jimmy Uso, hitting a Rana on Penta. Like, what are you doing? Setting up having to deal with Jacob Fatu before he springboarded and got caught in a Samoan drop. Like, oof. Jacob Fatu. And one of the best pops of the match, number 15, Joe Hendry. For me, so the kind of perfect wrestler that WWE would want. He is the kind of guy you could just put into their mid-card and he could probably have a really long career in WWE. Out with his TNA championship, held up Miz with one hand. Yeah, that was a nice fun little bit. Funny bit with Sheamus staring down Fatu after his attack on Hendry. He's like, hey, I was enjoying that. But you're going to be so serious all the time. But why have we had the likes of like the Miz and Joe Hendry? Like, why have we had these guys recently? Because number 16 is Roman Reigns. For me, proof of an inspired Rumble. One of the biggest names came out with still half the field still to come. If you've only really half thought about it, you do what he did with the women's one. He stacks up most of the big names in the final 10, just because they're the big names, is where the final names go. You're not really thinking about mixing it up to improve the pace of the Rumble. So that's where they go. If we place them there, maybe we can move them out later. But there is no later part for the women's one. The men's one, you can see where all the effort was. Spear to Miz, elimination. Spear to Sheamus, immediate elimination. Joe Hendry tried his shot. Spear, immediate elimination. Then his flow with Breakker immediately spun around, where Breakker beats him to him. He's the one to spear Roman. And just again, everybody in the feet were like, oh God, are we about to see such a complete shock happen? But the throw was reversed and a fourth elimination. But before we can get some bloodline assistance, Jimmy walks over to Roman Reigns, only for Fatu to jump in and immediately eliminate him, sending us into a hot stare down between he and Roman, with commentary running on it saying, you are watching right now a future main event. They're not the most subtle company. It's just the way they do stories. Like, if you ever want to know what story they're trying to tell, just listen to the commentary. You've seen the articles being like, oh, we think that Fatu might be in for a big push. Like, they just bloody said he's your future WrestleMania main eventer. How much, how many more hints do you need? Surely you can't need any more than that. Number 17, Drew McIntyre. Most of the Scots' anger comes from Roman. He's been waiting for this, and we get the dialogue to prove it. The Scot aligning with Fatu in their aligned foe. Number 18, Finn Balor. Didn't do that much. The first of our Gotta Build Some Lads to Get Cleaned Out Later. Also, no pop, because nobody recognised the music. I talked about it, I think, last week with the Indie Judgment Day theme. I think it's going to be the second or third week they've had the theme, and it's just not memorable in the slightest. The biggest thing for me is it wasn't even the first time of the night they'd heard this music, and they'd already forgotten it. For me, that's how bad it is. Because Raquel Rodriguez, she came out to the same music, got no pop. Maybe it might teach them that that's a Judgment Day kind of person, so they might be expecting a Judgment Day person to come out. Except for when the theme played for Finn Balor. Again, everyone's like, who? That is so bad that they'd heard it twice and still didn't recognise it. To be fair, if you played it to me right now, I've rewatched this Rumble twice. It's so unmemorable, I still wouldn't recognise it. Yeah, I've covered the Raws. I've watched the Royal Rumbles. But I've heard that music quite a bit. Yep, still absolutely nothing. Number 19, Shinsuke Nakamura. He may be the US champion, but he's not really getting a push. I'm flat out. If he holds the championship by WrestleMania, that title is not on the card, because I almost feel it's guaranteed. Like, Shinsuke Nakamura is not going to be on the WrestleMania card. The highlight of his moment was Penta stepping up off of Finn to hit a destroyer on Fatu. There was a reason that Shinsuke Nakamura had come out. Number 20, Jey Uso. Great pop for Uso. Reverse Rana to Jacob and eliminates Nakas. See, I told you we needed a lad to specifically get eliminated. 21, AJ Styles, Mr. Phenomenon, is back. And he's got his own music, like his shitty Death Rebel theme, gone, eliminated. That was something that I was having fun with, just in the social suplex chat. Just having Rich Latta there, just to experience all of these themes. With the takeaway of, Ruckus needs a raise. Good God, these themes are horrific. Braun Strowman, he's just too big. Time for our big boy Rumble Bash. Stared down Fatu to give us those two big men slapping that meat, throwing out Jacob and giving the man the opportunity to launch around ringside. Just a really angry Fatu, chucking things all over the place, throwing the chair at the ropes. There's a little bit of deflation from some I'd seen, just because Jacob Fatu is so awesome that seeing him kind of elevated him with the stare downs with Roman Reigns and that lot, to see him get eliminated by Braun Strowman just means that he's being dragged down temporarily into this mid-card feud type thing. In terms of WWE's mind, they gave a non-finish between them at Saturday night's main event because Fatu got disqualified and then they just did the post-match beatdown. It's not really a finish here because Strowman catches Fatu off guard and then Fatu has to throw his fit and go away. So you're going to have the blow-off match at some point. But this was all a setup for number 23, John Cena, and easily the biggest pop of the match. Appealing to the Indianapolis like the shilly is. Coming on down. Strowman had his spot, so out you go, you're not needed anymore. Then Strowman wasn't in position, slash the attitude adjustment by Cena didn't push Finn Balor enough to Strowman, so and Balor kind of somewhat lands on his head a little bit, and Strowman, still within camera, just goes, oh, I'm such a, oh, I can't believe that happened, oh, I'm so angry, and walks away. Number 24, CM Punk, just back-to-back got Cena, Punk, and the commentary starting to go wild, and I just got that sense of WrestleMania last year where it was like moment after moment, it's like, oh, okay, see what's going to happen here. The match itself just comes to a standstill for like these next... like three entrances, does everybody, no one, there's no real actually happening as we just wait for the next person to come out. The crowd were on their feet in such an amped state. Before anything can happen, number 25, Seth Rollins. Straight to Punk as commentary went into full hype about every lad being a big deal. As pretty much everyone I know went, I mean, Seth Rollins is... But I do think the angle they did on this convinced me that I could get really invested in the story they want to tell for a possible triple threat at WrestleMania with Rollins. Even if he, the wrestler, doesn't feel like a star on the same level, the character work for me is interesting enough with everybody else involved that I could get interested in it. Which makes this the absolute perfect time for number 26, Dominic Mysterio. It is for me absolutely timed to perfection. Frog splash to John Cena. Roman for the three of me. Samoan drop. Like, nope, not for you, Dom. Number 27, Sami Zayn. For me, almost, I want to say, the biggest disappointment of this Rumble, purely because he was so inconsequential in it to the point where I just wouldn't have even had him in it. I guess they wanted him to up that star level a little bit. But like Monday Night Raw, he squashes the beef with Jey Uso just immediately. So him being this Rumble just didn't mean anything. There's no actual purpose for him to be here. Like, he had a good character night with Kevin Owens. This doesn't add anything to either his character or the Rumble. Charged straight for Drew as the crowd sang his theme. Hulluva kick to the Scott. Hulluva kick to Rollins. And the final three, where if you were trying to remember who had pre-announced, you would immediately figure it out. Oh, okay, so Logan Paul's going to be number 30, because of course Logan Paul's going to be number 30. Then probably you'd put LA Knight before him, which means the next one is Damian Priest, out for his spot with Dom. Chokeslam stopped the 619 charge, and right out went the Judgment, dickhead. Number 29, LA Knight. Oh, how the crowds love the Yeah Man. Yeah versus Yeet was just a bit of fun. But, you know, good to have some fun now before Transphobe comes out at number 30. Drew and Sammy fighting, suckering in Jay into accidentally kicking poor Zayn out. And I guess in some way it plays off of hit for Sami Zayn on Monday Night Raw accidentally hitting his move on other people, and this time he got accidentally knocked out. It's more of like I guess it bounces off at that point rather than being an actual definite character point because he'd already had all that early in the show. And number 30, Logan Paul, so we have our final field. Just to quickly bash through what happened next, Priest eliminated Drew in a sudden surprise, possibly setting up a match there, but it gets more confusing because they've just moved Damian Priest over to SmackDown, maybe in the WrestleMania sphere where the brands don't really matter for this period that he's going to have Drew jumping over. Night against Logan, with Paul surviving by jumping to that reinforced announce desk and just standing there for a wee while rather than just making a launch back. Damian Priest then out in a similarly unceremonious fashion as Drew, because I guess he is like the lowest ranking in terms of who's likely to win this match. Like, Damian Priest feels pretty low down. Styles throughout night. Logan yanked down a springing AJ after he moved from the announce desk to the barrier, then the barrier to the steps, the whole time going, just taking his time, waiting for AJ to do his springboard. Final six, Roman Reigns, John Cena, CM Punk, Jey Uso, Seth Rollins, and Logan Paul. GTS to the Transphobe, kicked off our signature move spam, attitude adjustment, Superman punch, stomp, stomp. Seth and Roman, the only two left on their feet after. A full sequence then between the two, flowing into them both being draped over the ropes as he thought we got a normal flow of Roman Reigns then just clotheslining Seth out. But Seth always wraps his legs around Roman's head, so they're both kind of just like teetering over. When CM Punk eliminates them both, shock faces. But before anything can happen, Logan Paul then eliminates Punk himself, taking a bump almost on his ass so that he is able to face Roman Reigns, have that mini conversation just long enough for Rollins to jump in with something he surely didn't mean on purpose. In no world do I believe that Seth Rollins is meant to do the greatest stomp he's ever done. A double footed, like it was full of fury. The response it got from the crowd was just like, oh my god. Easily the best stomp of his career, but also easily one he never meant to do. Seth then lost it around ringside, stomping Reigns and Punk over and over. Gave us his full snapping moment, hitting Roman with a stomp on the steps. The three left in the ring, laying down as the drama played out with a full Seth angry exit up the ramp and all. The answer is no, that would not really be a continued sentiment properly on Monday Night Raw, because he's then full, Seth Rollins, I hate this character. I hate, for me, it's a character who, the dialogue that he gives, it'll be fine enough in terms of I've lost the match, but I'm picking myself back up, there's Elimination Chambers, all this stuff, I can't be thinking too negatively about stuff. But also, he's not really a character where you see the losses affect him that much in his performance, the way that he holds himself. He will come out and do the same Seth Rollins thing every single week. I realise that sounds a lot like, it's from a video game, was it? Oh, it's Wario. That's it. Found it eventually. Is it Wario or Waluigi? Because, oh no, Wario's like, and Waluigi's like, if just to give you the Nintendo voice lore. Can you see why they picked me to be the dungeon master in my group? Eventually, the three lads in the ring rose to their feet and we flowed into our finishing run. Double attitude adjustment? No. But Logan Paul went out anyway. And breathe. It's okay. They've not done nothing. They're not going to do Cody versus Logan Paul. We didn't feel like it was on the card, but you know, it's good to have to let us know that it's not there. It's good to have us know that they're not going to go with that. John Cena and Jey Uso, the final two. And it was kind of in my head, I was like, they could use this to maybe elevate Jey. It fit into the story of him knowing that he can win these things, but then just coming up short. They just told that story with Gunther, so it was there in my mind as I'm looking at it. And also, it's going to be one of the big three. Going to be Roman Reigns, CM Punk, or John Cena. When they eliminated all of the other big names, it's like, are they going to go with John Cena here? But it's when Logan Paul got eliminated. Suddenly, it was like, Logan Paul to get heat by eliminating Jey Uso. Then he threatened Logan Paul winning, and then John Cena wins. It was there. But as soon as they eliminated Logan, it's like, this is peculiar. But then it's Jey Uso. The two of them really paused and soaked it in before Yeet versus Yay punches. No booze for Cena in a very different era. The five moves of Doom returned, and so did plenty of Uso super kicks. Jey had his moments, even got to spear. Jey then held on and led to them both fighting on the apron for more Yay versus Yeet. Cena then eventually lifting Uso up onto the attitude adjustment position, teased on the apron and doing the elimination, when to the surprise of everybody, Jey just slips out of it into the ring and knocks him off. John Cena acting shocked to camera, all the big names, and in the end, none of them won. Yes, keep my rumbles unpredictable. Perfectly a fan of this. I've talked about how I felt about it in more detail at the start of the show, so I don't really need to go into it into too much detail. But yes, it was I really, really enjoyed this rumble. So because I talked about it at the start, it's going to be really weird to just immediately finish that one and then go straight into the women's. But, you know, it's my fault for making it that format. So this time, you know, let's actually leave the conversation for me to talk about how I felt at the end of the women's one. One of those mediocre rumbles where there's very little story and just feels like a bunch of folk coming out. It's not a bad rumble per se. It didn't make me angry watching it. It's lower end of middle where it just kind of was. There's nothing in there to make me angry, but there's nothing to sink your teeth into. It just was and it happened. So number one, Io Sky, who I talked about earlier as being her role was to be there to have moves hit on her. Our first opportunity to see the infographics as well. This is actually a perfect time to talk about these. They were across the bottom of the screen for each entrant. And at this point, I was like, hey, I don't actually mind it. I went in two different ways. I started not minding it. It's like, oh, that's okay. I assume Americans are more used to it. The sports, like you'll see some, the scoreboard looks a lot more like that from what I've seen. So I was fine with this at first. Then it gets to a point where I'm like, oh, this is going to be on. I thought it was just going to be there for the entrances. And I thought, oh, that might be cool. But it's there for the entire match. And I realised for the first maybe five entrances or so that I wasn't watching the match and I wasn't getting invested in it. Because I'm writing notes anyway. And then I look up and I see an information thing flash up. And I was like, oh, well, that's interesting. And then the next entrant comes out and I realise I've just not watched the match. Then it turns out nothing was happening anyway to get my attention. Then at some point during this match, I learned to just stop looking at it. And I would then look at it when I wanted to. And maybe this is just like normal to Americans. But to me, it was a skill I had to learn whilst I was watching it. Again, our scoreboards are not like this. We don't get information thrown at us to keep our attention like this. Number two was Liv Morgan. Okay, yeah. At this point, I was like, oh, at least you can tell a story here. But then, like, Raquel Diggers isn't until, like, way later in the match. And there's not really much threat. There's just people coming out doing things. It's very mediocre. Roxanne Perez at number three. Great pop for Perez. As I said earlier, she breaks the record for staying in the longest. She was the last one with Charlotte Flair. But that's putting it as a stretch. She just got immediately kicked off the apron. Number four, Lyra Valkyria. Number four and five, you can just compare the effort they've been with the two different mid-card women's champions. Number four, Valkyria. Poor lass got like two punches in before the straps of her top just went nah. So nothing happened in her section. Liv kind of somewhat taking over doing a little punchy punch and having to improvise a little bit because suddenly Valkyria's fly, whatever she was going to do, just had to stop. It's like, that's unfortunate. Number five, Chelsea Green. Both mid-card belt lasses in one after the other. All the folk in the ring beat on Chelsea and they got booed for it. Chelsea Green's one of the most over people in this rumble. Number six, B-Fab. The commentary team had fun. My proof that nothing happened. You get bodies for somebody to eliminate is what I'm thinking at this point. Added to it, because number seven, Ivy Nile. You suck for the American lady before she got in and suplexed a bunch of lasses. So, okay, we're building Pill up. Who's going to be the star to come out? Number eight, Zoe Stark. Okay, I'm still a body I expect to get eliminated. In for some kicks with her war paint on and a whisper in the neck breaker. No eliminations yet by the time at number eight. Where's my big lass? Number nine, Lash Legend. Like, oh, okay. Yes, it's an NXT name, but she's a powerhouse NXT name. And even if she doesn't eliminate anybody, like, she's our second NXT woman in, but she was just there for like a wee spotlight. And honestly, when she got into the ring, she felt like she was the best entrance of coming into a ring and changing things up a bit. Like, felt like the first one to actually do something. B-Fab tried to take her, but instead they just kicked each other. Elimination and Chelsea Green top-styled B-Fab. Lash Legend, she's a powerhouse. If not her, then somebody else. Number 10, Bianca Belair. The EST on out. Because we've got to get to some elimination. So here's an actual telestar. Bianca throwing three of them to the apron, running roughshod, but not actually eliminating anyone. Ah. So, next to number 11. We've eliminated one person. We had someone who I would call somebody who you should be building as one of your like main figurehead stars of your division. She's just kind of just come out and started doing things like everyone else. Bit of a worry at this point. Number 11, Shayna Baszler. Came on out. Cole was talking her big, but the actual big thing was Ivy Nile chucking out Lyra Valkyria. Proof of like very little plans is, oh, they want to do a Ivy Nile, Lyra Valkyria title match. They teased it a little bit, but to have like a mid-card champion just thrown out like they're nothing, like, oh, that sucks. Number 12, Bayley. Good pop. Had to stay down with Io. Good times. She becomes another figurehead person to just take the moves of the next person coming in. Number 13, Sonny Deville. Filling out the Gillette Fusion collection. Number 14, Maxine Dupri. Actually nailed her kick-up. There were way too many kick-ups in this match. It's something about the flow which I really disliked, where they'd have a little tussle, do a kick-up, and then stare at each other like, yeah. Also, like, later on we got Stephanie Vaquer and Julia, where they're staring at each other like, yeah, this is epic. Like, look at us. Look at us two meeting again. It's like, you bloody met each other on Wednesday on NXT. It's been 3 days. It's not that big a deal. A big part for Dupree throwing out Ivy Nile, and in honour of the way that David Lynch would sometimes direct his films, this character has served its purpose, so out you go. in one of the Twin Peaks movies, there's a character who literally just fades on the film. It's kind of like, well, I mean, he served his arc, so I guess off you pop. Number 15, Naomi. Halfway through this rumble, we've only had four eliminations. Yeah, B-Fab, Lara Valkyria, Ivy Nile, and Maxine Dupree. So Naomi comes on out, so we're going to lighten up this field a little bit. All three of Sonya, Stark, and Baszler thrown out by Bailey, Naomi, and I miss who it was, I want to say Belair, because that fits in with that trio. But from that point when did Sonya Deville come out? Number 13? It's not as long as I thought. It felt way longer. It felt like the life of the match had just been sucked out because that heel faction was kind of, I wouldn't say dominating, but the pace of the rumble was, there was nothing. It was just kind of flat and dead, just waiting for more names to come out. I had just been expecting somebody big to come out and start eliminating people. Like that we talked about with the men's rumble, you got Bron Baker, you got Jacob Fatu, you got Roman Reigns, and like a nice gaps between the two. Here it was just people coming out, and it feels like, I was talking about it in the chat with the Social Toothpicks guys, it's like, it just felt like we're building ladders so that we can then chuck them out when a big name comes out. Then Bianca Belair came down and didn't throw out anyone. It's like, oh, Bailey didn't throw out anyone. Like, oh. But anyway, yes, Sonya Stark and Baszler all got thrown out. Number 16, our next NXT name, Jada Parker. They threw a nice bit with her, Lash, Naomi, and Bianca having a crack. But then an accidental kick ran us into a legend's demise, eliminated Lash Legend. Ugh. And Indianapolis have Green so over that they booed four black women beating on her. It's like, optics. optics bad. Not that wrestling fans have ever, you know, ever been too concerned about that. Number 17, Piper Niven. The first lass to be like, I ain't fucking running. Just no. Her and Charlotte Flair. They were, so she turns up for like, who's the biggest stars? Because they refuse to run. It's like, they're Charlotte Flair and her. But an immediate elimination as Chelsea Green accidentally bumped off the apron by Niven. Big boos as the Indianapolis fans continued their love for Chelsea. Number 18, Natalia. What, like, she wasn't not going to be in the Rumble. At 19, Jordan Grace, so the commentary could officially say that she signed with the WWE. She got to kick out Jada Parker. Big pop for the Death Valley driver to Piper. Holy shit, clearly from Pat, as he just swore openly on commentary. Like, finally, something big to pop for. But the other thing was, they did this big moment for Jordan Grace. But it wasn't because they were building her up to have, like, a later showdown, really, with anyone. This is one of my worst things, like a multi-person match like this, where people come out to do their spot. Maybe they'll get an elimination, but they got an elimination so that you can then react to them getting eliminated. It's like, oh, it sucks. Number 20, no pop for Meechi and Mia Yim. Straight back into stuff happening. Biggest pop of the match, Alexa Bliss. Just easily the biggest pop. But perfect timing as well, just to really kick up. Just the lacking oomph that was there. It's just like, yes, something for me to actually sink my teeth into. There's just something there. But also, Jesus Christ, the commentary. As soon as they start, it's like, oh, yeah. So they planted a story for people to say, oh, and she's quite far from the contract, so that they could say, oh, yeah, you can't trust them because look who here she is. When that's not how it was reported at all. They put the story out there to be reported like that, but the way that the reports all phrased it from what I saw, they were all just, it's like, oh, word is like, this might happen and this might be the case. The likelihood is she'll be at the Rumble, but the contract things are looking pretty, not looking great at the moment, possibly. But that's how it was phrased, but they put the word out there, so the feeders out there being like, oh, she's going to leave us. She's not going to re-sign at all. And the word that we know like to come out now is apparently Alexa Bliss did re-sign like on the day, and the Shotzi was meant to be in this position. Of it, like, it sucks for Shotzi. You just see this photo of Shotzi backstage in her gear, just in the locker room as well. Properly kept this secret, like on the day Bliss signed, and here she is with this big huge surprise. But for me, when the commentary started raffing on about it, I just felt so embarrassed for them. I was just like, oh, you are not coming off as the cool product in this very moment. Like, you are a white hot product right now. I mean, obviously the point is you believe us, we're the source of news, but that world of the protective kayfabe doesn't exist any, like, it's fine, people want to enjoy your product. Yeah, we're in this era where people want to enjoy the product, they're not constantly looking for ways to tear it down, so you don't need to be as protective and doing weird PR shit like this, which, if you are in the know at all, company just feels like they're acting embarrassingly. It's just like, ugh. Yeah. Whenever they do it, I'm like, this is embarrassing for you that you felt the need to do this. So it's very Vinceism era thing to be doing. Number 22, Zelina Vega. Amazing gear for the Rumble as always. Got to Code Red Grace. Interesting fact from commentary. This is good commentary here where they told me, like, oh yeah, she did that because she's Amazing Red's cousin. I was like, oh, I didn't know that. Number 23, Candice LeRae. I've written down two words. No pop. 24, Stephanie Vaquia. Great pop. She got to dance with Perez. Then an awesome dragon leg whip to Bailey. before doing nothing in the corner, ready for the next entrant. 25, Trish Stratus. She was the entrance that got the crowd going, "This is awesome," which always felt like a weird thing in modern WWE fandom for me. Like, you don't have to chant that every time, you're just having a lovely, fun time. Because I can understand, especially after the Bliss pop and the way this match is flowing and you got to get to Stratus, I can understand the live crowd having a fun time at this point. It's not like a level where you chant, "Oh my god, this is incredible. Oh my god, I'm losing my shit." No, like, having a fun time, it's all right. 26, Raquel Rodriguez. Big power led to Liv doing something for the first time in ages. Big boos for Liv and Raquel team together to eliminate Bliss. I'm not saying her first name because I've got an echo in my room, as in the Amazon Echo, and I've already had to edit out one portion where I tried to run through a thing and halfway through me reading a paragraph just in the background, it's just a, "I'm sorry, I do not understand what you are asking," because I'm, god damn it. Number 27, Charlotte Flair. Okay, sorry, Selena, but the Queen easily had the best Rumble entrance gear. Also, she was the only one to get any pyro. I think Cody Rhodes, when he came out at number 30 2 years ago, I think he was the only one as well to also get pyro. All hell of a way to lean into her being the favourite, which it does, like, sentiment of the Rumble really worked into leaning into the men's one, because they've kind of conditioned you here to be like, "Ah, here's the favourite," and then the favourite wins. You're even less expecting the unexpected to happen in the main event. Big knee brace and loud reactions to the chops. Like, it felt like it really has been a while. Like, we haven't actually seen Charlotte Flair presented in the Triple H era, which makes it interesting when you watch Monday Night Raw as well and she starts to get booed. But I feel like a lot of that is the sentiment that came from the past era, because we just haven't seen Charlotte Flair work under this. Like, the Charlotte Flair character that's getting booed is one that is badly written in the horrific writing quality of the Vince latter days. We've not seen her get, like, any form of rejuvenation in a way under the Trips era, so I'm interested to see what they do. Monday Night Raw was then leaning pretty strongly into the reactions she's getting. She immediately started to get boos because there's favourites from this era that people want to see. And Charlotte Flair winning isn't, like, that exciting. It just kind of is. But you can use that as a story. You can really, really use that. And if she's almost in the, like, similar to what John Cena's going through at the moment, it's like, "No, I should win. I'm the best one." But then the current era beats her. Yeah, no, it's... She immediately sort of danced for Jordan Grace before the most casual elimination of Mia Yim. Says, "Oh, you're there." Off she pops. And then Piper Niven shortly after. Number 28, Julia. I talked about earlier her staring down with Fakir. They'd her have a quick little flow with Io. Jordan Grace got eliminated by her. But hey, she served the purpose to appease the TNA stuff with the collaboration. Well, she's not TNA anymore. She's WWE. We've taken her. Led to a nice current NXT versus the remaining NXT horsewomen in a 3-versus-3. Number 29, Nia Jax. Also, that spot didn't go anywhere. It wasn't like the final six in the men's rumble from 2018. We got the past versus the present, and maybe this was like a little echo they'll go for from that. But these weren't the final six. There were still two more people to go. There's still loads of people in the ring. And this spot then didn't get brought back later or anything. Like, it was just a thing that happened. Wasn't building to anything. Like the rest of the match, there was no flow. There was no building story. 29, Nia Jax. Just immediately yanked poor Vega off the apron. Time to clean house. Stare down with Stratus, immediately interrupted by LeRae, and out goes Lucky Candice, setting up Nia taking a head scissors before eliminating Trish. And number 30, who's it going to be? And I was sitting there being like, pretty certain it's Nikki Bella, and then Nikki Bella's music hits, like, ah, that's a shame. Well, it's weird though, because would I have liked Becky Lynch to be number 30 if Charlotte Flair's winning? I think that would have been worse. Like, long term, I'm picturing not just the pop at number 30, I'm picturing the flow at the end of the match. Becky's not winning, so why would I want it to be Becky? Surely it shouldn't be Becky. But with Bella out, we had our final lot. A wee push-ups competition with Roxanne led to Roxanne, Io and Vakur dangerously on the apron. Liv and Raquel joined them, then Bianca. And my assumption was they were just going for the biggest elimination spot, because the Nia Jax comes over and is meant to just tip over and eliminate them all. But it looked like a few of them just fell off. So Nia Jax approaches. They give all the eliminations to her. She approaches and kind of starts to do something, but some of the others kind of throw themselves off, so it's not really, like, it was really badly executed. It's one of those where you write it down on paper and go, "Oh, that could be interesting." It's really tantalizing, because it will get rid of all of these people that you then don't have to think up of clever ways to get them eliminated. Instead, you put all of these big names in one big kaflump. That's me referencing a Wallace and Gromit book from when I was a kid. There's one big kaflump, and off they fall off the apron. There's only one way for me to describe it, though, because it's just shit. On paper, maybe this idea could work. But then when you're practicing it out there, it's very evident it doesn't. It just didn't work. And obviously, I don't know how it went in practice, but I look at this and I go, we can't go much better. I don't see what it was meant to look like properly, because it's just too many people for logically for it to look good when Naya comes over and pushes them out. Julia and Roxanne danced, Julia into the ring post and then out by Perez. It felt like, again, another somewhat uninspired elimination. Then Bayley and Roxanne got to have their moment together, which again wasn't really that much given that they were the two building up into the Rumble, which led to Nikki knocking the lass off the apron. Nikki, you have served your purpose. Eliminated. Final three. Going home quickly, and a nice surprise to see the giant ending avoided. But what I mean by that is the 2004 Big Show, can the little guy eliminate the big man? Copy almost of the Rumble 2000. Copy almost the 2015 one with Kane and Big Show. Can Roman Reigns overcome the odds? It was something where it felt, when I first learned that it happened, and I remember watching the 2004 Rumble on Dailymotion all the way back when, I was like, oh, that's quite cool. I enjoyed that. Obviously, I was younger as well, so I'm easier to impress. But it was the last thing I wanted. If you're going to get me to turn on this match, it would have been Nia Jax, Charlotte Flair, final two elimination, and dragging out the, how are they going to do it? Oh, Seth Rollins and Braun Strowman, that's another one. I'm just not a fan of this ending. Instead, give me two people or characters I'm invested in, rather than a scenario of how's this person going to come over the odds of the big person. It's just too big. How are you going to eliminate him? Like, no, I feel like it had its moment in time, but I don't want to see it anymore. I would much rather it's two characters I'm invested in. But when it's Charlotte Flair, Nia Jax, and Roxanne Perez, there's only one thing that's happening. But instead of us getting that big, giant moment, we got Charlotte lifted Jax out first, leaving just her and Roxanne as final two, but not for long at all, as just a quick kick to the face, and Roxanne Perez eliminated. Winner, Charlotte Flair, in a very mediocre match which had one note: Charlotte Flair's coming back. And they played that note, Charlotte Flair came back, she won, and then she got booed on Monday Night Raw. And part of me thinks it's not entirely her fault. It's a Royal Rumble that presented one winner, gave us one winner, and it's not a character that we've got any reason to be invested in. Like, she's been gone for too long, and the most recent memory of her isn't that great. For her character, she had a great match with Rhea Ripley. I felt like before she had a quite sucky time in terms of injuries the past 2 years as well. Like, she, in her promo on Monday Night Raw, she was talking about how it was really sucky last year. But if I'm remembering it correctly, the year before wasn't that great for injury either. So she just had a really sucky, unfortunate time. And finally she's back doing the thing that she loves. But the character notes that we remember are character notes from a really badly written era. And I'm willing to give it time to at least get me to care about the character, even if you're going for LOL Charlotte wins. Even if you're going for that. I'm interested to see how does this current era write that character, because they haven't really had the opportunity to. Ladder match for the Undisputed WWE Championship, Cody Rhodes versus Kevin Owens. The titles elevated on Saturday night's main event so they could be returned to the lads and then elevated again here. Can't ignore how hot the crowd were for this match. And the two were happy to oblige and just get to it. Like, I say that after it took 20 minutes to get to the bell from the previous match. KO slammed Cody onto the ringside ladder, using the stabilizer snapped off to cross Cody's face and right into a walk and brawl around ringside. Both lads taking drinks from the fans and smashing them onto the other's head. Back to the ring for the routine, we want tables. Because it's not a stand-up pinfall match, so that's the chant you do. The ladders be like, what, you think we're related? I don't know that, man. This match did a lot to combat the tables chant by just ignoring them. For me, that's the best way to combat this. It's a chant from a previous era that was against the show. It makes no sense in the current era. It's just become the thing you chant, and I feel like it's now it's become that properly with no context there into why you're really chanting it, other than it's no DQ. I feel like you're on the route now to start going to getting them chant to something else. And this match did it. Like, later in the match, they're not chanting for it. They're just invested in the story. What did see more action than I was expected, though, was the little ladder. It was used as a tease for a death-defying jump. It got back body dropped onto. Cody took more bumps than I expected to. You know, I've just been conditioned for KO to take all of the bumps for the prettier WWE lad that they want to get over. Inventive Kev got to organise the ring with ladders propped differently in each corner. One a little open on its side, one draped over the bottom rope. The one on its side resulted in a holy shit after a package pile driver got flipped into a painful back bump for the innocent Canadian. Like, do you like taking that bump, Kevin? I swear you take that in every other ladder match, and it looks like it feels like shit every single time. It's like, oh, oh dear. Powerbomb yanked Cody off the ladder and onto the bottom rope draped one. Like, oof. That looked bad. Both lads took some damn painful looking bumps here. The Fisherman Buster corner reversal onto the ladder, the most gnarly of them all, which made it the perfect spot got to bring out the outside Sami Zayn factor, as I was talking about earlier with him in the Rumble not being that great because he already had his great character moment. Officials and refs going all serious concern face as Zayn got to do acting, everyone helping up and checking on both lads before we got back into the flow with an added fuel of exhaustion. Head blood, a hugely important beat for Cody's goody character, with KO bleeding, and you see Rhodes flare into violence. Like, okay, I said the Fisherman's Buster was gnarly, but the Alabama Slam off the announced desk that ended the match was easily worthy of being in that spot. The reaction it got. Does that gear that Cody had to dig into, that the person he had to become to retain that title? A ladder match with an actual story and escalating flow instead of fun spots. Like, don't get me wrong, fun ladder times have their place. Like, for me, Money in the Bank especially. I'm expecting fun spots and a great time. But if it's a one-on-one ladder match and it's like this in a heated feud, I don't really want to see that. For me, this was such a lesson in how to build an escalating narrative through the ladder beats. But yeah, I really enjoyed that championship match. I was a bit concerned at the start where they have their little moment outside the ring and then just walk and brawl. I'm not a big fan of walk and brawls, really. It's not a style I'm that invested into. But I felt like the second half escalated really, really well. Unfortunately, we end on a more, like, lower note. 2 out of 3 falls. WWE Tag Team Championship DIY versus Motor City Machine Guns. So, were the tag lads given the time to really deliver the match we know they can? You don't need me to finish that. You know they didn't. The Machine Guns and a Royal Rumble pay-per-view, though, is pretty wild. I watched Shelley wrestle in a church during WrestleMania weekend last year. Really cool visual. I say watch it on stream. I didn't go to America. But in terms of the flow of the match itself, think more what would normally be a near fall that swings momentum, instead gets a pinfall and pretty much just builds a match like normal. Like, it pretty much does the same beat job. So there's almost no point in this being a 2 out of 3 falls. Just with a pin instead of the momentum swing. Some nice dirty baddie tricks with Gargano and Ciampa, met with some delicious karma. Ciampa sneaking under the ring to stop a Machine Gun hot tag, him distracting the ref leading to the man missing the gun's tag, but immediately after a Shatter Machine had Sabin distracting the ref in his pleading discussion and gave Shelley the time to kick out. I didn't realise it at the time, but apparently that was just a full-on sequence from a DIY revival match. Like, that's cool. Obviously, that wasn't brought up at all. It wasn't really brought up by the commentary teams. Like, oh, it's not a sign of a tag team learning from a past encounter or anything. The third fall being more big spots and near falls, finally felt like the crowd was starting to get in at this point, because they were not reacting for any of the previous stuff. I actually felt like for these final fives is where they were finally giving the green light to go at it. But no fear, there's a reason they've let them do that, because it's only for a short time. Because WWE, they've got to interrupt the match with their angle. Street Profits interfering and smacking the guns with a crutch. A meet in the middle and DIY retained. But it's Street Profits music that plays over the post-match replays. Crutch shots to the champions at ringside too, as Cole full-on explains why the Street Profits did what they did to a scripted T. Yeah, this match was an angle, in a way, which got stretched out to a 15-minute contest, which otherwise felt like every other standard tag flow of a WWE tag match. Just, again, with the what would be a normal momentum swing instead scores a pinfall. So it doesn't feel like a 2 out of 3 falls match. It feels like a standard match. And the crowd were not responding to it. They were not into it. It's like, when Shelley gets his fall to make it 1-all, they did not give a shit. It's like, oh, man, I'm watching the Machine Guns in the massive stadium like this, and they do not care. Other notes. Like, you know the rhythm of WWE pay-per-views by now. One match, a fuck ton of ads, and time wasting for like 15 minutes. Stop. And I won't lie, the Wingstop Superstar Arrival is kind of hilarious. Like, you do you. I just found that hilarious. The arrivals on a pay-per-view is now a sponsored segment. It's like, of course it is. And Nick Khan really getting his grubby advertisement mitts in there. They bragged about the record-setting gate with, you know, the fluctuating prices fucking the fans over. Their main thing is to make as much money as possible. So they've got to, you know, they've got to line go up. And not included in line go up is caring for your fans and making sure, like, you're actually kind of being responsible with prices for things like that. Like, no. You can add it to your perception of being a white hot ticket if you include a method of pricing like this, which completely screws them over. Yeah, well, so just in terms of talking about the planting stories thing again, like, I find it hilarious that they are still doing that. So they can rip into the dirt sheets on their big live shows. Whilst the Netflix audience goes, I don't know what that is. Like, before you mentioned it, I didn't know what a dirt sheet was. Like, I don't know what these things are. We are a new audience. What are you talking about? That's partly why I felt embarrassed for them. Not for the commentators, by having to, like, for saying that shit on a live thing. Like, it's so strange. You just couldn't resist. You couldn't help yourself by doing that. Then on to the serious stuff. This is a final note. Carting out Stephanie McMahon to open the show. So a choice, like, not ruling out that it was meant to be Trips that was meant to come out, and then things happened and they're like, oh, maybe we shouldn't do that. I mean, he was on camera for the speed spot later. Also, like, just to bounce off of that, just like the news of him possibly going into the Hall of Fame, which came out the day before the updated Janelle Grant lawsuit. Like, there is no such thing as a lawsuit by surprise coincidence. Especially when you look back on previous action of what do they do around the time a thing drops. It's like, it's repeated action. They've got a precedent now. You know when they put out a thing that there's likely going to be something that's about to drop. Yeah, but that's the Royal Rumble. I have made a bunch of notes in Monday Night Raw, but I felt like I've somewhat naturally integrated it in to making the show. Like, Royal Rumble itself, I felt like it was the first half of the show, crap. The crowd did not care for the men's tag team match, and the women's Royal Rumble was a nothing, almost waste of time. The second half, with the ladder match and then the men's Royal Rumble, you can tell that that is where all of their energy and creative focus is going. And it was there on the screen to tell. So if I'm ever going to rewatch this Rumble, I think it's going to be a very long time before I forget how bad this one was and how nothing it was with the Charlotte Flair one, where I'm probably just not going to rewatch it for a long time. I'll quickly mention Monday Night Raw. Well, I've talked about the beats with Charlotte Flair. Mainly the other beats were setting up Jey Uso going for Gunther, the Elimination Chamber matches. We saw CM Punk defeat Sami Zayn before Kevin Owens hit a package pile driver on Sami Zayn. Got a huge reaction because it's been built up, then building up the move, then keeping Randy Orton off TV still has really, really sold that move. So when he hits it, it's got a huge reaction. It's how Triple H liked to book him in NXT with the powerbomb onto the apron, which then when Vince saw as, oh, that's a cool move that gets a reaction. Yeah, but there's a reason. There's a reason, not because it's just cool. In the Women's Elimination Chamber qualifier, we got Io Sky versus Liv Morgan. We let it go for a little while, but kind of similar to what I was talking about with the tag match, it was because there's going to be an interference screwy angle, and that's how Liv gets in. And I've also talked about Charlotte Flair, where Rhea Ripley comes down out of, like, please choose me, but she's going to be going over to SmackDown to talk to Tiffany Stratton. She's going to be over to NXT, talk to Julia. And Seth Rollins got set up where his character is going. Notes on CM Punk and Roman Reigns both after the way that he attacked them both. As I said, he came out just doing his almost positive, being like, hey, Seth Rollins, hey! Coming out. I'm picturing Waluigi more, even though I'm making a Wario noise. I'm realising. But yeah, he just comes on out and he does normal Seth shtick. Sami Zayn eventually comes out and he gets to actually be a character. But the Elimination Chamber is now immediately on everybody's minds, and that with somebody unexpected winning, suddenly all of the favourites are there for the Elimination Chamber too. But the main other note is that AJ Styles is going to be on Monday Night Raw. He was announced by Adam Pearce, and when he announced that, in walked Bron Breakker with his Intercontinental Championship, just being like, hey, do you want to prove to me that you actually take my belt seriously? Talking to Adam Pearce. So, you know, a little build of possibly going to get AJ Styles versus Bron Breakker. It's like, you know what, if you want to give a opponent to Bron for WrestleMania to really help elevate him up, like, AJ Styles really ain't the worst guy. But yeah, so the week of WWE, Royal Rumble was a show of two halves. It was a game of two halves. And the second half, for me, knocked it out of the park. An all-time great men's Rumble. First half, I'm never going to watch again. I was knackered after the women's Rumble. I felt so tired. The second half absolutely knocked it out of the park. And you can tell that's where all of their attention is. The Monday Night Raw, it bounced off of it perfectly fine. I didn't find it to be like a blowaway Monday Night Raw. It set up beats okay. It shifted us to the Elimination Chamber all right. Jey Uso, his emotional speech with him fighting back the tears and everything as he's talking, all full of emotion. That was a great promo just to really get you behind the character. So yeah, I wouldn't say that I'm like, oh my god, this first WrestleMania season, and yeah, they've kicked us off with the Royal Rumble, because sometimes you can get that off the Rumble, where it's like, yes, I love the direction. It's more that I like the way they're keeping all of these different plates spinning, and we still don't actually know what the big names are doing, because that'll be the actual main events. That's things left off in the air this year. We've had quite a long stretch of the Royal Rumble immediately setting up what the main event is going to be. Whilst I'm looking at this and I'm just like, none of the main events have been set. We're still completely open like that. And I like the roads feeling different. I'm a fan of that. Anyway, I have massively overrun. It's the longest recording I've done in a while. Hence why I other notes the entirety of Monday Night Raw. It's completely passed through it. So anyway, thank you for listening, liking, engaging in any form, any manner. Always appreciated. Never taken for granted. I'll be back this time next week to talk about a standard Friday Night SmackDown and Monday Night Raw as we are officially on the road to WrestleMania. And, you know, covering WWE. It is what it is. I feel like with... I take one step closer to do the Dave Meltzerisms as time goes on. Then again, all heated and be like, oh, this is... I just watched the WWE and go, yeah, it's all right. Like, it is what it is. It's fine. It's just like, yeah, that's the way they're going, isn't it? It's just a stance that kind of seeps into my vocabulary and way of talking about it more and more. It's like, yeah, that's what they're doing, isn't it? Anyway, I'll be back this time next week. So with that, I thank you. I bid you adieu.
Adios.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.